WIOXradio.org.
WIOX is supported by Pico Moose Restaurant on Route 28 in Big Indian, featuring farmhouse cuisine prepared with locally grown ingredients and a growing wine and craft beer list. Open for dinner Thursday through Monday at 4 p.m. The Pico Moose Tap Room and Lounge serves food and drink until midnight Friday and Saturday. Reservations and information at PicaMooseRestaurant.com or 845-254-6500.
WIOX is supported by Columbia Green Media and their Daily Mail newspaper. From Ravenna to Palinville, from the Rip Van Winkle Bridge to the Catskill Creek, the Daily Mail's daily print edition, website, and social media presence are designed to bring the communities of the Catskills timely news, sports, and event information. More at thedailymail.net.
WIOX is supported by the Rec Center, the Catskill Recreation Center in Arkville, with a 25-yard lap pool, a weight-in pool for kids, exercise facilities, an array of personal training and fitness programs. The Catskill Recreation Center, County Route 38 in Arkville, open 7 days a week. More information at 845-586-6250 or catskillrecreationcenter.org.
Okay, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20 and at WIOXradio.org on the web and on any smart device. This is From the Forest with Ryan and John. John is out today for the 4th of July, and I'm here with a guest, Paul Misko. We're going to talk about hot weather hiking, but before we get into that, Paul, how's it going?
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, I figured I would.
It has been pretty hot. It's been finally warm enough to swim at North Lake. It's got to be at least 90.
Oh yeah.
To make that comfortable. But even that water got pretty warm up there in that lake.
So, how warm?
I felt like 78, if I had to guess, because other people were commenting like how warm the water was. Normally a half hour. And it's too much, so you got to get out, you know, because your lips are blue and you're shaking and stuff. But it's in there over an hour swimming around.
Man.
Nice.
No kidding. Yeah, this is definitely, when the weather's like this, you want to hit up some kind of cold stream or an area where the cold air sinks. And last night, I'm coming down up through the notch, through the Picamoose Gulf, yep. The notch there from sundown that empties into the town of Olive, into West Shokan. Watson Hollow.
Oh, yeah.
There's an area there where the snow will linger into May, sometimes even June. And you don't even have to get out of your truck. You can literally lean over and see the snow in the crevice there. And there's even balsam firs growing there, right off the side of the county road. Well, last night, I'm coming through, went to my friend's house over in Lackawack or whatever, Grahamsville.
That name.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hot. and I'm watching the temperature plummet as I go up the notch. Uh-huh. You know, it started out around 75, 77 in Grahamsville, and it plummets down to 68 degrees as I get into the Gulf, into the notch there. And all of a sudden, as I get into the coolest spot, and I don't think it's a coincidence, I see three fox, red fox, and then a black bear running right towards that cool spot.
Wow.
And I don't know. I mean, I've never seen wildlife in that area, and I used to work in that area, so, you know, I never seen them in there, and they don't really have a reason to be there because it's so steep. It's a hard place to get to from their perspective.
Yeah.
But it's a cool place. So I don't know. I wonder if there's something to that.
I guess animals, I mean, I was surprised I didn't see any bears swimming in the lake.
Yeah, right.
Because what are they doing, sitting on the mountainside roasting?
Well, we know that, at least I've read, where you'll see where they wallow. Well, actually, remember when you and I were hiking on East Branch, Neversink. That was a hot day.
Right.
It wasn't as hot as yesterday or today, but it was a warm day in the 80s. And that bear was in that beaver pond, swimming, getting around. I startled him up. So,
I don't know. Yeah, because they're wearing fur coats.
All year round.
They got to cool down.
Yeah, they must be hot as hell.
It's rough for the animals, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could see sometimes the birds by my feeder on hot days, they'll be panting. Their beaks will be open, and you could tell they're breathing differently just from the heat.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. So, Paul, speaking of coping with the heat.
Yes.
Is that what we're going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to be... you asked what's new. I got a couple other things that's new.
Oh, all right. Fine.
I mean, if you're going to ask... Have the decency to listen to what's new.
Well, I'm not a very decent person, so.
I got a whole half sheet here of what's new.
Sure.
Looks like a lousy apple crop coming.
Yeah,
is apple it? Trees have very few apples on them. Unlike 2 years ago, was it? We had a fantastic crop.
Yeah.
My pears are doing great.
Are they?
Blackberries are fantastic. But all the apple trees, including not just mine, but those in Woodland Valley, very few apples. And I don't know if it's the frost or the wind, the storms we had.
I mean, they do naturally go biennial.
Yeah.
Apple trees that whose fruit are not thinned out like the orchards do. The orchards use chemical thinning agents.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And what that does is it thins out the flowers so that they produce flowers the next year.
Each
year. If you don't thin them out, they used to do it by hand, but now they do it chemically.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, they'll go biennial naturally, irregardless. That's not a word, is it?
Yeah.
But regardless of temperature.
Irregardless of the word, yeah.
So, yeah. Are you getting a lot of cedar apple rust where you are? Because I'm getting a ton.
I've been cutting my cedar trees over the last several years when I first heard about that.
Yeah.
Because they were all over the place. They're like weeds.
Oh, man.
So I've been cutting those. Actually, the bigger cedar trees I made a nice bench out of.
Nice.
Beautiful wood, but they do cause the rust. And I started planting the Liberty apple. I did some grafts this year. I got 4 Liberty apple stocks. I tried to make them 5 varieties per tree by grafting on 4 scions from 4 different trees. And I think the best I got was one tree now has 3 varieties on it.
That's good enough, Paul.
Well, I aim high. I figure if I get half of it. And I don't have the grafting knack or experience you do. One day I hope to.
I don't know. I've only been at it 2 or 3 years. And, some years are better than others too, Paul, because this year was terrible. April was a terrible month.
It was
really cold.
Cold and dry. Super
and
dry.
I always find that when members, we're doing grafting at the Catskill Forest Association, that when members don't call us, that means that they're successful.
Oh.
I only get calls about the failures.
No news is good news.
And, we have gotten some failures, though. There is some potential fire blight going on, maybe, that killed last year's, that grew really well.
And then
all of a sudden this year they die. But that only happens on a very few of them. I still like to say it's about 80% success rate. But the weather, you can't control that sometimes.
I actually had my trees, after I grafted them, I put them in my garage under a light that put out UV.
Oh, yeah?
Because we had some big windstorms. And I know the grafted branches are very sensitive. They're easy to break off.
Absolutely.
And because that happened in years past. So I kept them inside. They were growing well under the light and kept them watered. But still, I think some of the scions dried out in the fridge before I could graft them on.
Yeah.
Because like I said, you forget about them even.
Yeah.
And so I've got four trees that have, each of them has at least two varieties. Some have, one has three. So it's something. Hopefully one day I'm aiming for five.
Yeah, five on one is nice.
Yeah.
How's your Asian pears are doing well?
Asian pears, fantastic. That's much better than apples. Fewer pests, fewer diseases. I have three varieties of Asian pear.
Yeah.
And they ripen at different times. So pretty much end of August, September, October, I'm loaded with Asian pears. I get piles of them. I give them away, throw them at people. I mean, so many of them. Our blackberries are doing fantastic this year, as long as we keep getting some showers. Yeah. I think last year I made 130 jars of jam, which you can purchase. I think Miglarelli's still has some in stock. And then I have thornless blackberries fenced in that are as big as your thumb. I mean, they're just beautiful berries, and those are loaded. So, again, if we keep getting showers, bumper crop.
Are we going to get showers today or what?
We were supposed to. Yesterday, we got a good soaking. I don't know if it happened up here.
Well, I'm seeing scattered thunderstorms for Independence Day and tonight, so we'll see. But there's
Friday's supposed to be a good soaking, too.
Yeah, we need it, you know. I planted some American plums.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I wanted those because they grow thorns. And
I know, I got
grows
one.
Thorns,
yeah,
is deer, not going to say proof, but resistant.
Sure.
How's yours?
I've got one I found last year. I saw all these plums, tiny, like an inch diameter.
Yeah.
And I looked it up online, and I told you about it.
You did already.
Yeah, but
told me.
this year, there's only like three plums on the tree. Last year, I could have made two jars of preserves. I ate a few, but I didn't know what kind of tree it was until I saw the plums.
Yeah.
But big thorns.
Okay, are the deer browsing it?
No, I've got I don't have as many deer this summer. This spring I had like 15 hanging out every day. Now it's like a fawn and a mother. I got a big turkey, comes to the feeder twice a day. I call him Stovetop.
Stovetop.
Stovetop, like the stuffing.
Are you getting ready for something?
I don't know, but boy, he looks tasty.
Yeah, sure.
In the hot sun, I could almost smell a roasting turkey out there.
Yeah, right. Paul, what kind of site is the American plum growing in? Like, is it on the edge of the woods?
It's on the edge of the blackberries and grass. It's okay. In between.
I mean, if they're not browsing it where you are over there in Orange County, that's pretty good. Because there's a high browse pressure there.
Oh, they're browsing. They browse. They wreck a lot of my trees.
But, I mean, if they're not browsing that plum, that's a good thing. That means that plum must be somewhat deer resistant.
It is, but I have a lot of tree branches, apple tree branches within reach. I don't have it fenced in, orchard like you do.
Yeah.
So, I think last year they antlered one of my apple trees to death. They just, a deer with antlers, I guess they practice or whatever, they just stripped the bark off the tree with their antlers.
Yeah, they buck rub.
I mean, that's not fair.
Absolutely. They did it, and I should know better, but I took a fence off one of my peach trees, and he stripped one side of it. The peach's still alive, but
yeah.
Stripped one side of it immediately.
It hurts.
Didn't waste any time.
Yeah.
So what else you got? Anything else going on new?
From the what's new section, I've been finally milling up some of the boards I harvested. Trees I cut a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Finally making myself a nice kitchen table out of black cherry and maple, curly maple. I milled up some beautiful elm planks I got from Prattsville.
Elm planks?
Elm.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if, I guess you know, but elm, when you cut it green, it smells like manure. It
smells terrible.
Oh, God.
It's got a cool, what kind of pattern does that have in it?
You want a bad smell,
weird,
you put like five elm planks in your car and drive home on a sunny day.
I don't like taking elm anymore. I tried splitting that once, and that'll be the last time for me.
Yeah, but once it's dry, it's fine.
Yeah.
Took about 4 or 5 years. I mean, I'm talking 2-inch planks, 2.5-inch, but it is a tough wood. So I've got this beautiful table half done, and working on a few projects, just milling this lumber up. I chainsaw milled it, So it's a little wasteful that way, but it's the best I could do. And curly maple is beautiful. I've just been making, selling a bunch of cutting boards, end tables, coffee tables are in the gallery. Just love working with it, but a lot of it goes out in shavings, you know, when you run it through the planer.
Yeah.
But once it's all done, it's just fantastic. And I have an idea, an investment idea, if you got an extra $100,000 lying around.
Yeah, sure.
You ever have wake up in the morning and you want a fresh glass of goat milk?
Never.
But you don't have a goat.
I don't have a goat either.
But if you did want that glass of goat milk, but you didn't want the trouble of everything's getting droned pretty soon. Delivery packages, deliveries, medicines delivered.
I hear Amazon's experimenting with
exactly.
it.
Exactly. What about droning a goat? You could text Drone a Goat Company and they will drone a goat right to you. You milk it, text back, take it away, and we drone that sucker right back to the barn.
I don't know what this has to do with hot weather hiking.
Well, it's just a business opportunity out there for anybody listening.
What do you got, stock in this droning?
Yeah, there's some downsides to it, but I could just picture goats being droned overhead.
Yeah, doesn't Australia have drone Amazon or something?
I think so, but it's...
I thought I heard that
I want to be on the cutting edge of the goat milk.
Yeah, sure. Business. Now, what about Department of Health with raw goat milk? Or is this like, how does
well,
that work?
There's some downsides to having goats, live goats being droned overhead.
Yeah.
We'll have to work that out.
Huh. You know, you're going to see, someone's going to propose like hunting deer with drones or something.
I guess.
Right.
You could drone a chicken to somebody if they want fresh eggs.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because,
you know, especially on small items like that, that cost probably more to transport them than anything else.
Again, you don't want the hassle of chickens, but you want the fresh eggs. There you go.
Yeah.
Drone.
Well, I know in arboriculture, they're starting to experiment with assessing tree health, you know, with drones, going up high in the crown instead of always trying to climb them.
Sure. House inspections are using them.
Yeah.
Lost hikers being found with drones now.
Right. Hey,
so that's just an opportunity. Feel free to pass on it.
Okay.
And I want to announce that a shout out to Susan in Hong Kong. You've got a listener on the other side of the planet.
We do on From the Forest?
That's right. More groundbreaking history.
Right now.
First
she's listening.
It was quiz shows, and now it's in the morning there. It's like 7 a.m. International audience, halfway around the planet.
How about that?
I'm waiting for interplanetary listeners coming soon.
Hey, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest on WIOX Roxbury, not in Hong Kong, you said?
Hong Kong.
Yeah, geez. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but tonight we got Paul Misko on, and we're going to talk about hot weather hiking, but Paul might have more new stuff. I'm not sure.
I just have one current event and one news item.
No, go ahead.
Saturday
at
Woodchuck Lodge has been having a series, once again, Wild Saturdays. And I will be giving a talk Saturday at Woodchuck Lodge, 1 p.m., on hiking, old-time hiking compared to new time. I've got some great old photos and artifacts to pass around, so that's always fun. But they have other Saturdays throughout the summer, Wild Saturdays, great speakers, great presentations. Check it out.
I should be there. And also the Catskill Forest Association, while we're plugging away here.
Sure.
Has got a tree ID walk Saturday, 10 to 12. So you could go to that.
Oh, wow.
And then just go on up to Roxbury, right? You know.
Okay.
So, sure. But, Paul, you've been on a few times.
Several.
Many times now.
Many.
Half dozen, maybe.
More
Talked about tanneries once.
Tanneries.
Maybe twice.
Woodworking.
Yeah.
Hiking. Old-time hiking.
Sure.
Quiz shows. The quiz shows beloved by, well, a few.
Tanneries. You know, before we get into the hot weather hiking, right now is when bark peelers back in the day would be peeling bark, right?
Yeah. There was a saying that they would come out of the woods the 4th of July, but that was just a saying. Depends a lot on the weather. But there was a time that came during the summer when you could not get the bark off the tree anymore.
Yeah.
And that was it. They gave up and came back home. But they would start in end of April, early May. The bark would just pop off the tree. and take it as long as they could. Now, depending on the weather, that would be mid-July, end of July, or early July.
I do some hobby tanning, and I've realized is that I can't peel the bark before Memorial Day usually. It just won't come off. But after Memorial Day, it seems to come off like a jacket. It just comes off. And as far as how late, I've read that even August you could push it. Depends, though, because, you know, in the Catskills, one area in Kerhonkson is completely different than up in Sly Mountain.
Exactly.
So who knows? But, yeah, and it really comes off. But, man, it would be a kind of miserable job when it's in the 90s peeling some bark, man.
Well, they write about in the 90s, these sticky hot days with the no-see-ums, because they slept in the woods, a lot of the guys, just out in the open. And they said the no-see-ums were terrible. As soon as it gets dark, those things come out.
They'd have
smoky fires and bury themselves under blankets or whatever. So they'd roast under the blanket to avoid the black flies. It was a hard day's work, long, hard day's work. And, tough life, but you could pick up some cash without much skill, a lot of labor. But you could just pick it up and drop it as you needed the money.
They talk about the weather in those summers?
Sometimes. John Burroughs and others write about specific days because he kept a journal. Certain days, certain winter days, winters it didn't snow all winter. Grass stayed green, he said. He talked about a three-month drought where the siding on the houses was curling. It was so dry. 3 months, no rain. So they had some freaky weather back then, too.
Yeah.
And only by these records by Burroughs and other people do we know that? So that's interesting.
Yeah, there's the records are so short. You know, there's nothing. It doesn't go back that far. I get in these debates with people once in a while about weather, but
well, the official records don't go back far, like even forest fires. But the newspapers.
Okay.
Jay Simpson and I will research the old newspapers online, and then you find unusual dry weather, or droughts, or forest fires breaking out, or freakish cold weather. I remember I gave a wild Saturday talk 2 years ago at Woodchuck Lodge, and it was like 48 degrees. I was in long johns. It was a cold wind. I had hot coffee for everybody. And the next day I did a giant ledge hike. It was like 45, 11 in the morning. And that was 4th of July weekend.
45.
45. And you know me, I hate the cold. I was dying. this year will be fine, but even recently we have extremes, but they had the extremes back in the old days, too.
Yeah. Yeah. How you deal with it? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right. So, Paul.
So now on to the topic.
Hot weather hiking.
Yep.
I don't like it. There, that's all I'm going to say.
Well, so those of us who are more sturdy and can handle it.
Right.
If you use some tips, makes it a lot better.
My wife says that maybe I shouldn't wear the same thing that I wear all year round. Maybe she's right.
Yeah, dressing lighter.
Like wool socks, boots, and long pants every day that I wear? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It could be part of the problem. Yeah, clothing is very important. I have a couple of old, very light cotton shirts, a couple of white cotton shirts that are good to wear. But here's some of the tips I use. The timing. Most people on these incredible hot days like we've had recently, they will still go on that hike midday. The hottest part of the day, that's when they start up Giant Ledge or Slide Mountain. It's crazy. There's no reason you can't go 7 in the morning. I've even gone up to Giant Ledge for the sunrise, 3:30 in the morning. That's beautiful. It's actually chilly. It's a little dark. You bring a headlamp. But it's just wonderful to hike, and it's cold. And you sit up on the ledge and watch the sunrise, or go later in the day. But you have to make sure you have a couple flashlights and you know the trail and such. You know, you're coming down as it's getting dark.
Yeah.
But there's no sense to going in the brutal heat of the day. That'll save you a lot of hassle. And I like to have a big, tall glass of Gatorade drink on the way to the hike.
Why Gatorade?
Well, it's got electrolytes. We've had people on hikes. I lead hikes with the Catskill 4000 Club. You may have heard of it. In fact, you're a member.
I have.
But where people just, their joints started hurting. They just started feeling a little fainty. And it's probably electrolytes.
Paul, do you know what what are electrolytes?
Well, they're different minerals, trace minerals that are in your body needs to function. Calcium and potassium and such that Gatorade and similar drinks give you. I think even pineapple juice has it, other juices. But I found, since I've been having a big, tall glass, slurping that down on the way to the trailhead, saves you a lot of agony later on. Because then you could drink water. Water flushes out these trace minerals if you just drink water. So then if you kind of stock up on them before the hot weather hike, you're going to fare a lot better. So that's a handy tip.
Have you ever drank a lot of water on a hot day and felt kind of nauseous right afterwards for a second?
Yeah. You could.
What's that about?
Well, I'm not a physician, though. I did play a doctor in a school play once, so I have some medical experience. But you can drink too much, especially cold water, in one shot. That's not good. It's better to just sip your way through the day. But like I said, if you kind of stock up on your liquids on the way to the hike, on the way to the hard work day outside, whatever, if you feel thirsty, you're already losing ground. So drink before. Don't wait till you're dying of thirst to have a drink. So especially if you're hiking with kids, just have some extra sippy packs, water, whatever. Purposely stop to take a drink. It's easy to just keep pushing on. And, well, I'll drink when I get to the summit, but not in this hot weather. You want to keep hydrated.
As I used to say in the Marines, drink water now.
That was it?
Over
That's the saying?
And over again. It didn't matter. You got to have a broken leg to be like, drink water now.
Yeah. No, drink it while you can.
Headache, drink water. Fever, right. Drink water.
Yeah. It's really, that's the times I get headaches or migraine or something triggered when I just forget to drink.
Yeah.
And it's easy to do.
It is easy to do. It's a lot of work drinking, staying hydrated. When I was hydrated when I was in the military and when I was a ranger, because I had a hydration device with me all the time, which was like, remember those Camelbacks?
Wait, hydration device?
Yes.
You mean a canteen?
Yes. No, a hydration device.
Device.
Camelback. It would be an actual thing that they gave
us. It's a bladder.
For the DEC, yeah, and it would go through the pack, and the pack was meant for it, carrying it. So it was really convenient. I don't have one of these anymore.
Now, did you put water or beer in there?
Water.
Okay, just checking.
And I'll be honest with you, I did feel a lot better.
Yeah.
But you literally had to be thinking about drinking water all day long.
Right.
Now, when it's right next to your neck, it's easy to do.
Right.
But, and I had nothing else to do, let's be honest.
And if you have to stop and fish it out of your side pocket of your pack, it's a little harder.
You're less likely to drink.
Right.
Yep. But, my wife is reading an audiobook right now by TB12, Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And, he's an older guy who's still a very successful quarterback. But, yeah, hydrating those muscles. But he drinks all the time. Doesn't stop. So, yeah, it's a lot to do to stay hydrated. Man.
Yeah, and I think that's something not done in olden times in hiking. They would just kind of tough it out to the summit, and then, you know, when you read their hiking journals and so, if there was a spring, they'd stop for a drink, but hydration packs and plastic water bottles and all that stuff, and I think they ran into a lot of problems with that.
Huh.
So the timing of the day, drink. I like to freeze, have a couple of frozen water bottles along. I know one hike in 1992, August, very hot spell. Friend Dave and I, we hiked up Wittenberg. So we brought one unfrozen water bottle, and we froze two solid. And we wrapped them in our fleece and our packs. And we thought, well, halfway up the mountain, we'll pull those out and have ice water. Well, we drained our water bottles. The springs were dry on the way. And those water bottles we took out of the fleece were frozen solid. So we had nothing to drink till they thawed out.
Yeah.
And I remember I took the two frozen bottles, put one under each armpit to try to melt them to get a drink out of them.
No kidding.
So we had plenty of water. It was just in solid form for a while. It took a while for them to start thawing. It was funny. Kind of backfired. But it's nice to have, if you don't wrap them as carefully, to have start out with a couple frozen bottles, and all the way up the mountain you'll have ice water to drink, and that's nice.
Yeah, Wittenberg doesn't have, from what I remember, the springs.
It's got basically one just before you get to the Terrace Junction, but
yeah,
it's often dry.
Right.
And same with Slide Summit, has a spring, but I have found that bone dry a couple times.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty dry for that one to go.
Yeah, but it happens. Now, the one on Giant Ledge, never found dry.
That one's awesome.
But you have to watch that one, because when you see that sign for spring, there's a sign just before you last pop up to the summit, and spring to the left. There's a giant boulder just a few yards down that trail, the spring trail. It's got a little puddle under it. That's not the spring.
Right.
That's something people scooped out for their dogs. If you go beyond that big boulder, you could see a little trail. Then you get to the spring, and that water is 38 to 40 degrees all summer long, which is nice. But that's like from frozen water deep in the crevices that's coming out of.
That's a good spring.
But a lot of people have gone to that first little dugout and thought the spring was dry. And because they've told me, oh, the spring's all dried up, and I find out they were at the wrong place.
Right.
Go a little further. So don't count on the springs. Bring plenty of frozen water, and then a couple of frozen bottles aren't bad to have. Extra T-shirt. You know, you're hiking up the mountain. You're just drenched in sweat. So for a little fistful of material, of space, you could throw a T-shirt in your pack. You get up to the summit. You change into that nice dry T-shirt. It just feels a lot better than sitting in that sweaty. So that's something I usually do. And also, while you're hiking up, if you do come to a spring, dunk that T-shirt. Take your T-shirt off, dunk it into the spring, wring it out, and put it on, and you will feel at least 20 degrees cooler. It's so refreshing. It's like going for a swim. And if you're feeling like overheated, it really cools you down. So that's a nice tip.
Yeah, to go into the stream if it's deep enough.
Yeah, or a little spring. All you need is a little bowl full of water, you know, bowl-sized water to get your T-shirt in there. And people see me do it. They just never thought of it. And then they do it, too, and they're like, oh, man, this is great. What a change.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is hot weather hiking with Paul Misko. And here's a song for Independence Day.
Some have said down through history, if you last, it's a mystery, but I guess they don't know what they're talking about. From the mountains down to the sea, you've become such a habit with me. America, America. Well, I come from down round Tennessee, but the people in California are nice to me, America. It don't matter where I may roam, tell you people that it's home sweet home, America, America. And my brothers are all black and white, yellow too. And the red man is right to expect a little from you. Promise and then follow through, America. All the men who fell on the plains and who lived through hardship and pain, America, America.
WIOX is supported by Columbia Green Media and their Daily Mail newspaper. From Ravenna to Palinville, from the Rip Van Winkle Bridge to the Catskill Creek, the Daily Mail's daily print edition, website, and social media presence are designed to bring the communities of the Catskills timely news, sports, and event information. More at thedailymail.net. WIOX is supported by the United Way of Delaware and Otsego Counties, with local programs designed to improve health, education, and income security in our communities, including the Dial 211 program, community resource specialists trained to connect people to local organizations that provide critical services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. More information at 607-432-8006 or unitedwaydo.org.
You're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we have guest Paul Misko on talking about hot weather hiking.
Yes, and I'd like to say it is sweet getting my own microphone for a change.
Yeah, really.
Usually I'm doing these quiz shows and we have contestants and you're sharing a mic and you got to lean in and out. This is nice.
Yeah. You know, hey.
Like going from Chevy to Cadillac.
Tell John that's it.
Well, we're going to switch gears a little bit on the car theme here. Hiking with kids.
Don't do it.
Hiking with kids. I guess the first thing I want to say, just from things I've noticed on the trail, is a lot of times the kids get way ahead of the parents. And they're hiking alone, essentially out of sight of the parents. This happened one memorial time on coming down Wittenberg with my group, and there were some kids, two looked like maybe 8 and 10 or 8 and 12, a boy and a girl, and they're coming down the trail, and they passed us, and we were just taking our time. And I looked back, and nobody around, no adults, and then I finally... Two adults came around the bend coming toward us, and I said, oh, your kids are just ahead. And they said, we don't have any kids. So I don't know whose kids they were. They were headed downhill. They looked fine. Somewhere their parents were on the trail. But and then another time I saw kids get too far ahead coming down slide, and they went past the barrier and missed the trail turn.
Yep.
And I yelled ahead. And the parents, I waited for them. The kids stopped. The parents caught up. And I just gave them a nice, you know, hey, you got to keep your kids in sight.
All right.
You know.
Yeah.
I want to make them feel bad, but I keep them in sight. You would
do
least that for a dog. At least do it for your kids.
Yep.
So another thing is dress your kids in bright clothes. Not camo. I mean, sometimes you see a kid in camo. It's like, are you tired of this kid, or what's the deal here?
Well, how do you know what the goal is?
Yeah.
You assume.
I like to assume the parent wants to hang on to the kid for a while longer. But there was, I just think of that because there was this guy who was kind of, we were, again, another time coming down Wittenberg, my friend and I, and this guy was behind us, but he had this bright, that bright green they use for construction sites and all, you know, the vest. I forget what the name of it is. There's a technical name. But that's the shirt he had on. And I was worried about him getting down a couple of rocky places on Wittenberg, you know, where you got to kind of climb. But we could see him because he was in his bright green. And I just wanted to make sure he got down that tough part because he was alone. And we could look back and see this big orange or big green blob headed down the rocky. And he made it without falling. I said, okay, now we could go at our own pace. He made it past the rough part. Which reminded me, when you're hiking with kids, put them in bright clothes that you can see if they run ahead or if they wander off the trail. You could spot them.
Yeah.
Just another little safety feature. You know, we could get too nuts with the safety, but it's an easy thing to...
Whistle might be good.
Well, we're moving on to that. Don't jump ahead, my friend.
All right.
Don't jump down the trail. There may be a bear waiting. I find it a little disturbing when, like, an older kid, 12, 13, 14 and up, aren't carrying anything, and the parents are carrying everything, the lunch, the snacks, the drinks, the sweaters. Hey, you're old enough. Start carrying some of the gear.
Yeah.
Make the kid feel like he's, you know, learned some responsibility. But I think young kids, especially at least 8 years old or so, get them a little fanny pack. And in that fanny pack, because they might get off the trail. And all of a sudden they're gone. You turn around and your kid's gone somewhere. Now, would you rather have him with nothing but the clothes on his back, or a little, tiny little fanny pack with an energy bar, a little water bottle, a flashlight, a space blanket, and a whistle? Maybe weighs a pound if you add it all up.
Right.
He could carry it without even a whimper. But what a difference to have a kid lost in the woods, maybe have to spend the night as you look for him, get a search party, heaven forbid, that he has got a little something, a flashlight on him, space blanket he could wrap around, instead of just the shorts and t-shirt typically worn. I don't know, to me, that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe when it's a little older, add a lighter and fire starter. Teach him how to build a fire, you know, when he's Boy Scout age or she's Girl Scout age, 10, 11, 12, they should be able to start a fire. How many times kids get off the track, lose their parents in the woods, and they, you know, teach them not to keep walking, to kind of just stop as soon as they think they're lost, stop. And it's happened, you know, where kids just, they get off and they're eventually rescued, but why go through that?
Best tool ever, headlamp.
Yeah. Yeah, they're so cheap. Go to Walmart, get a headlamp, $12.
They are the best, man. I'm getting rid of it. I think I would like to propose, Paul, that we get rid of the saying, best things since sliced bread, and replace it with best things since headlamps.
Yeah, I agree.
You ever watch an old movie and the guy's trying to change the tire with a light, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
That sucks.
And sliced bread.
I mean, come on. Sliced bread. All right, we can move. It was great.
Yeah.
But we can move beyond.
And it's
beyond,
time.
Right?
Yeah.
It's time.
Slower than molasses in winter.
Right. All right. Come on. Jeez.
But, yeah, it's as you know, I'm big. I tend to put more in my day pack than most people because I lead hikes. And when you lead hikes, you're in a little different category. There's people that forget stuff. But when you got a kid, put a little fanny pack on him. He's well equipped if something goes awry. And give him some, teach him what to do. Give him some lessons, fire building, not to panic, to stop when they're lost, when they don't know where they're going anymore. Just don't keep walking. So there's things you could do like that. I guess also to provide more fun on the trail, because I remember as a kid taking hikes, and it was just such a long slog up the mountain. even going up Wittenberg when I was a kid with the family, that's a long. So make a contest. How many pine cones could you find, or how much, you know, here's a list of things. The first one to spot it gets points or a treat, or we'll go every half hour of hiking. We'll stop for a snack or a treat or something like that, and make it fun. Don't just make it this grind up the mountain.
When did Paul Misko start going up Wittenberg?
I first started off on my own when I was five.
Five?
Five.
Going up where?
Just taking a walk in Woodland Valley, just on my own, without parental knowledge or permission.
Your parents would be arrested today, Paul.
Just disappearing and showing up at some neighbor's house down the road. And then when I was, I'd say 11 in Boy Scouts, I would just put a few things in my day pack and just bushwhack up the mountainside, Wittenberg. My mother had more faith in me than my dad. He would worry more, but I'd be home by dinner. And that might have been stretching the limits a little bit, going alone. But I certainly had a backpack full of knew how to start a fire and all that stuff. But certainly to go with somebody, especially at that age, and take some equipment, and somebody knows where you're going. You just learn, it's a lot to be said about having a confidence in the woods, that you're not going to freak out if you get a little lost or misplaced. I knew how to get back home all the time. You know, that was never a problem. Go downhill to the stream, you find houses, and you could figure out where you are. So you don't want to push it too much, but it's not good to keep your kids overprotected, and then when they're older, they get lost, and they don't know what to do at all. So you gradually give more responsibility, gradually have them carry more equipment, and then by their teens, they should have their own day pack with their own stuff in it, and not have mommy and daddy carry everything for them. And I remember some hikes, even adults, it's frustrating to find so many adults who even do bushwhacks and they don't have a flashlight in their pack. They don't have a lighter. To me, that's crazy.
Right.
Especially.
Lighter's a great invention.
Yeah.
It's been around a while.
Right. You know, no more flint and steel, no more bow and drill. Just throw a lighter in the backpack.
I mean, I like primitive, fire building skills. I respect it, but
sure.
Lighters are great. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And I've had hikes where I specifically told people, our group sometimes does hikes. Remember going up to a waterfall in Woodland Valley, and I said, the lighting for photography is best as the sun is setting. So we're going to be coming back in the dark. Bring at least two flashlights, you know, headlamps, whatever, two sources of light, because it's going to be dark by the time we get back on the way back. And this one couple came, and we got to the falls and taking pictures, and then they're like, oh my, we got to go because we didn't bring any flashlights, you know. And
Yeah. It's
frustrating. What happened was they keep their flashlights in their car, and we forgot to put them in our day pack. Well, get a tape day pack, keep your emergency gear in there, and leave it there. Don't go moving it around, taking it out to this pack, to the car, to the house. Keep it in your day pack, so anytime you go on a hike, you grab it, it's there. And then Right. Now and then you take it out, check it, make sure the batteries are good or whatever. A couple energy bars, lighter, fire starter, space blanket. You don't need much. It's like 3 pounds of stuff total to get you through the night if you have to spend the night on the mountain.
I like multi-tools too, man.
Yeah.
I think they're one of the best. Other great invention.
Sure. Fantastic.
It really is. There's some great companies making multi-tools. But
it's not expensive. I mean, you could go to Walmart and get a pack of survival stuff, all you need, very cheap, and it lasts for years. I mean, it's not like you got to buy it every time you hike. But just keep a pack ready to go, and then you never have to worry that you don't have it on you.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is hot weather hiking with Paul Misko. And John's out for Independence Day, but here's another song for Independence Day.
These are my people. This is a land where my forefathers lie. These are my people.
In brotherhood we're heirs of a creed to live by. A creed that proclaims that by loved one's blood stains, this is my land, and these are my people. These are my people. They were born on and lived by the land. These are my people. And their cities were raised by hard-working hands, and their faces do tell that they're holding on well to this their land. Yes, these are my people. These are my people. These are the ones who will reach for the stars. These are my people. By the light of the earth, you can tell they are ours. A new step to take, and a new day will break for this my land. Yes, these are my people. These are my people.
Johnny Cash, and this is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight. Happy Independence Day. One of the oldest countries in the world. I don't think a lot of people realize that, Paul.
Yeah, it's a lot they don't realize about this country.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, what about, you know, the U.K. or Ireland? Or, you know, those countries don't have a contiguous governance entity.
Right.
Ours is. It's one of the top three, or some people debate, the oldest country in the world.
First one with that constitution lot of other countries copied most of.
Yeah, I mean, Germany was Prussia or Prussia, whatever you want to call it, Bavarian. They were all city. Italy was city-states until fairly recently.
Yeah.
So, happy birthday. All right. What do you got?
Well, to put a tail on the dog, so to speak. Some fun things from the forest, things made out of wood that are kind of neat, since it is from the forest.
Yeah.
So we had the Indians, of course, made war clubs. You know, you've seen war clubs, and bows bop each other over the head with the war clubs. It's a pretty good weapon. And sometimes they stick a little metal blade in there just to add a little icing on the cupcake. And at the same time, the Americans, 1775, built a submarine out of wood.
Get out of town.
Really, the Turtle. Look it up on Wikipedia. They built, Bushnell. He went to Yale. Age 31, he entered Yale College.
Bushnell, that's a familiar name.
And he started blowing, that's a hobby. Get this, he's going to Yale for, you know, medicine and all sorts of courses. On the side, he's blowing things up underwater. He had an idea that you could blow up gunpowder underwater, which was questioned back then.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, now you'd throw him out. You know, he'd be arrested. But he would go to ponds and make little underwater bombs and blow them up and say, yeah, it can be done. So he built a submarine, wooden submarine, 1775, which almost blew up a ship in New York Harbor, British ship. The submarine worked.
No
kidding.
Totally
as planned. It's just that the ship, he had a piece of metal, and the drill wouldn't go in. It was just a fluke that it did not succeed, but the submarine actually worked. And it was the dials, the instruments inside the compass were illuminated by bioluminescence, the fungus that glows in the dark.
Get out of here.
The compass.
Now you're just going nuts.
No, man, it's crazy, but it's true.
All right, 1775,
the war is just getting going. And we already have a submarine, a working submarine, and there's a copy, an exact copy, in the Saybrook Museum in Connecticut. You can go see it, and I think there's a couple other copies around, but...
You wouldn't happen to know what kind of wood it was.
It was oak.
Get out of here. What kind of oak? Red oak or white oak?
White. No fool would use red oak for a submarine.
All right, all right. Because white oak is waterproof, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And one of the tortures the American Indians used, this is an account I have in a book of written 1841, was to a captive, they would take all these wooden slivers, like big splinters, and just stick them all over the person's body. Like he'd look like a porcupine by the time they were done, and they'd light that on fire. And it was another thing from the forest, the way to have fun with. Elm bark canoes, the Indians that captured the Snyder family near Blue Mountain and took them up past North Lake on their way to Canada to redeem them. The British would pay them for captives. They said they brought one older Indian fellow along because he could make a canoe out of elm bark in like a couple of hours. He would strip the bark off a big elm tree, fold it just right, get some wood struts inside, and they'd all get in it and paddle up the river as far as they could.
Man.
So that's pretty, that's some great know-how to be able to do that.
Yeah, plus they're on their way from North Lake to Canada.
Yeah.
On foot.
Right. They went through Prattsville and worked their way up to Canada.
Yeah, that's no joke.
And the Snyders were able to come back.
Yeah, we got about 30 seconds on From the Forest here, talking about hot weather hiking with Paul Misko.
Yeah, so I mean, even in the Civil War, they used logs. They would make a cannon out of wood sometimes if they needed the South. So it's amazing things you could do with wood that have been done.
Okay.
All from the forest.
All from the forest. Well, Paul, thanks for coming on again. The show flew by.
Yes.
And if you missed it, it was Hot Weather Hiking with Paul Misko, among other things. And I'm sure we'll have Paul on again soon enough. But up next is Mostly British with Rick Neblung. And happy 4th of July, everyone.
Have a good night.
All right.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest.
You're listening to WIOX Roxbury, your community radio station at 91.3 FM. And WIOXradio.org. Enjoy!
WIOX is supported by Boyer Sign Company. Traditional sign making using modern technology. Serving the Hudson Valley and beyond since 1990. on Route 28 in Phoenicia. More information at 845-688-3079 or